Welcome to Chapter 36, My Favorite Bartender Stories. There's something about Irish bartenders that is unique to them. And I've thought about it over the years, and the only thing I can think of is they don't have a filter oftentimes. They tend to think and say, or I should say what they think, which is, let's just say, it takes a certain talent to be able to get away with that and actually become endearing to customers. Well, I'm going to share with you stories from three of my favorite Irish bartenders. The first one is Gail McMenamin. She was a bartender at a place called the Greenhouse in Margate, which was a beach bar. And Gail was married to a Atlantic City cop, and she was a character. Again, she was one of those folks that didn't really have a filter, and her customers, including myself, loved her for it. Anyway, one day, during the time when France would not let us use their airspace, and we were, rebelling against French fries and anything from France. So there's about a half a dozen of us sitting at the bar in bathing suits, that type of, in beach attire. And this was at the end of August, so it was hot. Anyway, into the bar comes a woman, I'd say mid-50s, who was really dressed very, very well. Certainly not a beach outfit. Anyway, I figured she must be a realtor. So anyway, she sat down, very prim and proper, and asked for a Grey Goose martini. And Gail, without batting an eye, said to her, "We don't serve that shit in here anymore." And she looked at her like, "Yeah, we've cleared out our bar supply of all French-made drinks." She didn't say it in an offensive way. In fact, it almost sounded patriotic from my standpoint. Anyway, and she then offered this woman, she said, "Listen, I think maybe Maloney's around the corner would have Grey Goose." So the woman thanked her and left. So we're sitting there, and of course we applauded Gail for her American response. And about, I don't know, 10 minutes later, the woman comes back in and sits down and says, "They don't serve that shit over there either." We all applauded, bought the woman a drink. That was memorable. My second favorite Irish bartender, Jack Gallagher, or we nicknamed him the Leprechaun because he looked like a leprechaun. Anyway, I have two stories from Jack. One I experienced myself. And one day I have a meeting in his restaurant, Lehman's, in Essington, PA. We had a lunch meeting with someone in business. So it was 1 o'clock, and next thing we know, it's 4 o'clock, and we're still there. And the food turned into alcohol as the afternoon wore on. And at that time, my then girlfriend Kathy was working at the law firm in Delaware, and I called her and I said, "Listen, why don't you come by Lehman's when you're done work and pick me up?" So or join us, I should say. So anyway, so about 5:30 or so, she comes in. Now, by this time, the place is packed. He walks in, and Jack sees her and says a very high-pitched voice, "What, are you here to collect the body?" A good laugh was had by all at my expense, which is fine. And the second story from Jack, which was a classic, he had been working in a bar a long time ago called The Shack, and The Shack had two levels. One was a street level you came in on, and the other one was from the parking lot. So the street level, on a Saturday morning, he was in there by himself cleaning up the bar, and the door opens, and a customer came in who he recognized. It was a merchant marine, and he used to come every time he would land on ground, on shore, I should say. He would spend his time and money drinking at Lehman's until he needed more money, and then off he went to the ocean, to his seafaring duties. So he came in, and he obviously had been drinking. And Jack said to him, "Listen, you can't stay. We're not open. We won't open until noon." And he insisted, and Jack really got on him and said, "Listen, I can't serve you. We're not open." So the guy begrudgingly left. So a few minutes later, Jack hears the other door open, the one from the parking lot. And this same guy comes through the door and down the steps. And Jack comes all the way down the other end of the bar and greets him and says, "I already have told you we are closed. We will not be open until noon." And the guy said, "Do you work everywhere?" I love that story. Last but not least was my good pal, Joe Shields. I first met Joe Shields. He was a bartender, again, in Margate at another bar called the Ocean Pub. Anyway, Joe Shields worked at the casino, at the Sands Casino, for years. He was a bartender there. And he was also the Grand Marshal for about 25 years at the St. Paddy's Day Parade in Atlantic City. And Joe Shields was one of these individuals. He knew everybody. Just knew everybody. He was outgoing, a character. Anyway, we really got to know each other. And in fact, when he got sick and diabetes took its toll on him, and he kind of fell on hard times. And I never forgot him telling me that, you know, most of his friends disappeared when, you know, he was no longer, you know, the same fun guy, at least in their minds. So anyway, during about a five-year period at the penthouse that I bought, I was there. I went there in the summer. So I let Jack stay there in the winter because I didn't want the pipes to freeze or anything. So he stayed there in the winter. But in the summer, he went to this this kind of like a shelter. And he used to tell the people in the shelter, "Listen, I'm only here for 3 months. I got to go back to the penthouse." But anyway, Jack developed this aneurysm. And it's like a bubble on a tire, for those not familiar with it. And he was seriously overweight, like 75 to 100 pounds overweight. Anyway, he went to Jefferson Hospital in Philadelphia, and they refused to operate on him until he lost 75 pounds because it was too dangerous. Anyway, so I'm getting ready to go to Key West in January, but in December, the situation got bad, and he had an operation scheduled. So he called me, and we met at this greenhouse, at the greenhouse bar, and he told me that, you know, he was told it was a 30% chance of survival from this operation given his overall condition. So he was giving away things. So he gave me his gold chain, neck chain. And I said, "Listen, you know, so, you know, I'm rooting for you. You'll be, you know." So anyway, I went to Key West. I stayed in touch with his friend Torker, a bartending buddy of his, to monitor and find out how he was doing. So I'm in Key West. I keep checking on him. And next thing I know, I called up, you know, into his buddy. And he told me he was, he's got through the operation and he's going to be all right. So anyway, I get home. And this is in February. I call Jack and we get together for a drink. He said he used to, when he got excited, he would stutter. So he said, I never forget on the phone, he said, "Jimmy, we got to get together. I got a story for you." So I meet him at the bar and he's sitting at the end. So I'm walking in. I said, "Listen, if you think I'm going to give you that gold neck chain back just because you survived the operation, you're crazy." So anyway, he said, "No, I'm not here for that. I want to tell you a story." Here's the story, like none I've ever heard. Torker, his buddy, picked him up about a week before I met him at Jefferson. Jefferson's about an hour and a half from the beach. It's in Philadelphia. So they're on their way home to recuperate. And he has a prescription plan at an Atlantic City pharmacy. So he says to his buddy, listen, why don't we stop at the pharmacy and get the Percocet, you know, the prescription filled, and while we're out, and that way I don't have to come out again when I get home. So fine. So they stop. His buddy goes into the pharmacy, comes back out and says, you know, they're backed up. It's going to be about an hour and a half. So he said, well, you know, his buddy said, well, you want to go to the Irish pub, you know, and have a beer and a sandwich. So he said, fine, but just one, then I'm going to go. So they go to the Irish pub. And of course, Jack knows, you know, Joe knows everybody. And so they're sitting catty corner, Joe to the left and his buddy to the right. Joe's talking to a guy he knows to his left. And his buddy is talking to a guy that Joe didn't recognize. So all of a sudden, his buddy says to him, Joe, you got to meet this guy. He said, no, I'm fine. Let's just finish and go. No, you really have to meet this guy. All right. Here is who this guy was. This guy was hired sight unseen by reputation only by Joe to sing Danny Boy at his funeral in case he died. Well, the guy, he said, Jimmy, it was the weirdest thing. Joe told me, he said, the guy spent the next couple of minutes apologizing. He said he didn't need the work. He's glad I survived. I mean, who has a story like that? I fast forward this a couple of years. Joe Shields passed. I'm at the funeral mass. Nobody is getting up and saying anything. So I decided I got to tell this story because this is Joe Shields. So I get up, I tell the story I just told you, only to find out that the guy behind me was the same guy who he had hired a couple years before to sing Danny Boy. So when the mass was over, he caught up to me outside. He says, you know, that was very surrealistic hearing you talk about me, talk about him a couple years before. Anyway, that is probably the most unique story I've ever heard in my life. I hope you enjoyed it half as much as I did when I heard it, and again when I'm telling it. Thank you for listening. Up next, The Odd Couple.